This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. The importance of first aid cannot be overstated. It is life-saving and vital knowledge, really. However, it's knowledge that many of us don't have and we're not trained in. Filling in some of the gaps today is Dr. Navindra Nageswaran. He's a family physician and general practitioner. Welcome to the show, Dr. Navin.
Thank you very much.
It's been a long time since we had you on.
Yes, I know. Thank you. Good to see you.
How widespread is first aid knowledge in Malaysia? I mean, you know, honestly, I only know about the Red Cross. You know, and we always tend to think that it's somebody else's job to know first aid rather than empowering ourselves. Yeah.
It's quite limited in Malaysia because it's not part of the study curriculum or school curriculums. So except for St. John's and Red Cross that have been promoting this program. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, don't think there are some private companies that do first aid, but it's very limited in knowledge. So generally, most of the first aid, somebody has to take their own initiative and go online and read about it or buy a book and read about it.
Mm-hmm. So, which is a little bit of a chore, really. I see that book sitting in front of you.
Yeah, like this is from the St. John's of from the UK.
Right.
They got very good books, but you can't do this yourself.
No, you can't. Yeah, and I've always wondered, you know, like simple things like going to dine in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And if somebody happens to choke, what do you do? I mean, I know you're supposed to put your arms together and, you know, push just below the chest.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you know you're doing it right? And what is the aim of first aid treatment, really?
See, the first aid is for immediate care. Like certain countries, we've got a good emergency service, a 000 in Australia, 999 in Malaysia, 999 in the UK, 911 in the US. Now, when you call, the ambulance should come in less than 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Not the
now,
case here, though.
Yeah. So if that's the problem there, then you have to self-study this. So basically stabilize and keep oxygen going through the brain. So in an injury, you minimize bleeding. In a cardiac incident or a respiratory problem or like choking, you just want to get the obstructive object out and start CPR if mm-hmm. that's necessary. So to answer your question just now, usually the first thing that you want to do is someone's choking. You know, you see them, they'll be clenching their throat and telling them, they won't speak. If they're saying, I'm choking, they're not choking. That's for the first thing.
So, it could be a tiny object, obstructing the airway.
They can't say anything else.
Okay.
No sound. So
Note to self.
Yeah. So maybe they want attention.
Yeah, possibly.
So once you see that, immediately you have to go behind them, you know, put your hands around it and then clench your one fist and put the other hand on top of it and go near the navel, the umbilical area,
mm-hmm.
and then you push inward and upward, you know. So if you do that, you're using the intra-abdominal pressure. You know, in the stomach, there's a lot of pressure. Those pressure pushes the diaphragm. When you breathe, the diaphragm goes up and down, if you know someone's chest. So now you reverse it. You use the intra-abdominal pressure, and then you push. When you push, the thoracic pressure will automatically push the obstructive object from the airway passage through the mouth and comes out. Sometimes you do it 2-3 times. Now, what happens if you're alone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm just adding this on. If you're alone at home and you choke, you can do the same maneuver, use the edge of a chair, and then put yourself there, and then you do it, because there's nobody else going to do this.
Right.
So inward, upward movement again on the top of the chair, put it there, or tilt the chair a little bit, and push it. So that will really help. Most of the time, in adults, whatever object that's obstructing will come out. It's a child that sometimes you have a problem. So that's where difficulties come in. And you need a bit of training to know how to do it on a child. The maneuver of hitting on the back has to be correct. So
okay. So with children, you don't use the front.
You don't. Not in a if it is an infant and below 5 years, you wouldn't use the one from the front.
Okay.
For a child above until 10 to 11, you would still use the same maneuver.
A lot of us think first aid is CPR. Is that a misconception?
CPR is in first aid. Because without CPR, then the first aid side of it is there are things for injuries, burns, musculoskeletal, and then you have got insect bites, then you have got nervous problems, poisoning, all that is first aid. But one component of first aid with CPR is respiratory and cardiac.
Mm-hmm.
So to address respiratory issues or cardiac issues, you need to know CPR because the person normally has collapsed or is unconscious. So CPR is very important.
Should everyone be empowered or have the skill of first aid training?
if you ask me honestly, I would say it's mandatory that you do this, because this is self-preservation. You need to know this, at least the basic. Everybody's got an identification card. Everybody's got a driving license to drive. But to live in a society, to understand living in a house, there's lots of areas of injury, from burns to electrical shocks. So first aid and CPR, I think it's mandatory, but it's not made mandatory in many places.
It isn't. What are basics? You said everyone should know the basics. What do you mean by basics?
I think the basics would be generally looking at the current conditions that it's deadly. For example, when someone has a heart attack or someone has a respiratory arrest. So knowing the few steps of CPR can change that, because 70% of the people can survive if you start CPR and get an ambulance fast enough. Like they have now invented this AED, a defibrillator, which is supersedes CPR. So you have an AED, you use that first, and then you start CPR. So.
Right. Then that is if that's for more cardiac cases.
Yes, more for. 9 out of 10 cardiac arrests is reversible if you have an AED less than 4 minutes. This is a statistics done by a lot of studies.
Right. And I noticed you wrote the AED in, you know, for me to listen to it.
Yeah.
Is it easy to, is it difficult to operate?
It's basically idiot-proof. Mm-hmm. It's always good to know what it says so that you learn about it. But if you don't know and you see an AED, it tells you what to do. It speaks.
Okay. So do it for, I mean, play it for me. I want to hear it. So it gives you the instructions.
Yeah, it prompts you the instructions.
Right.
So you just follow the steps.
Okay, go ahead.
So, for example, AED is used for if you see anybody who's collapsed, first thing you do is you call 999. And then if you have an AED, you just take the AED, bring it near to the victim. Then you just open the lid. And once you open the lid, it'll start talking. Mm-hmm. You can hear this shortly.
Tear open package and remove pads.
Okay.
Yeah, so it tells you to tear open.
There's open a package.
Tear
open package and remove pads.
The pads
peel
are.
One pad from so plastic liner.
So, I mean.
But just to give you an idea of how it works. Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's so simple. And then once you peel it and stick it on, it analyzes the rhythm, and then it'll tell you shock going to be delivered, stand back, or it'll stay start CPR, and it'll count with you, do CPR, you know, so it's...
But you need to also identify it is a cardiac arrest, and what if, you know, it isn't a cardiac arrest?
It'll never shock the person.
Oh, really? So yeah. The machine actually picks up a real cardiac arrest?
Correct. See, because it'll only pick a cardiac arrest where somebody is having a fibrillation. And it'll only shock a patient who's fibrillating. It'll never shock someone who's got a straight line or an asystole, we call it.
Okay. And what came to mind recently is an article I read about a Japanese couple in Mount Kiara who I think both were found dead in the bathroom because, and they suspect that the husband probably was electrocuted by the shower. The heaters, and possibly the wife may have gone to help and got electrocuted herself. In a situation like that, what do you do?
See, let's say, for example, if you knew a little bit of first aid, the first most important thing in first aid or in CPR is D. D is for danger. You have to look out for danger. So you have to know that electrical wire is there, there's current flowing through it. So you'd have read it. So the first thing is don't go near it. Switch off the main power source. And then you would have attended. But in a case of stress and anxiety, tendency to forget is there. But if you wear rubber shoes and you don't touch the victim directly with a stick or push off whatever that's causing the electric shock, could have made a difference. You'd have protected yourself. Because you see, in all this first aid and CPR training that we do, we always say the most important person is you. The victim has already sustained an injury, so you'll always focus on yourself first. So self-preservation comes into play again, so... That's important.
In the whole idea of first aid training, how much medical or anatomical knowledge do you need?
Actually, you just have to know where the hand is and where the foot is, where your head
is. As simple
is,
as that.
And where
because,
the mouth is.
Yeah, it sounds very, you know, medically related.
Yeah.
That some people would probably, you know, stay away from it.
You don't need to know the bones and the structure and all that. What you're doing in first aid is preventing an injury to become worse. Stabilizing the person or the victim for becoming worse again, and knowing how to keep them comfortable until help arrives. So that's basically, it's like you can look at it from a different way of ABC, and ABC and CPR is airway, breathing, circulation. In first aid, you can say access. You have to have access. You give comfort to the victim. And then, I mean, sorry, you give comfort to the vitamin C, so that makes it much easier.
And those other ABCs, and so, D, of course, is
It's access, basic injury management. So you know how to basically manage the injury. And the last one is comfort. Comfort is C. So you keep him comfort until help arrives.
So those are the key,
key points.
The basics of CPR or first aid. Yes. And the danger being, of course, the whole cardiac arrest and stuff. But besides that, what is classified as D, danger?
Danger normally in the line of CPR, it's always been looking out at the scene, making sure there's no oil spills, there's no contaminants, there's no chemicals, there is no electrical wires, like the shock in the victim in the bathroom, making sure that the power switched off. So all that's what D is. R is another sector which we didn't address earlier, is response. You got to check the victim. So how do you check the victim, because you're not a doctor? Tap on the shoulder and say, hello, hello, are you okay? Mm-hmm. That is enough. And if they still don't respond, then you start beginning CPR or you start doing the first aid, provide the first aid care.
We're discussing advanced first aid. If you have a question for Dr. Naveen, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasothi. Dr. Navindra Nageswaran, who's a family physician and general practitioner, has a huge passion for first aid, actually. And he's here to talk about advanced first aid. We spoke about the ABCs of first aid, the Ds, the danger, and the R, the response. There's also something called the three Bs, the breathing, bleeding, and bones. What are you training people to look out for in those sorts of instances?
For bleeding? Normally, you have to stop the bleeding. You got to arrest the bleeding that you see. So in a first aid condition, whatever is around the environment, you got to use it to give compression. Simple stuff, like compress as long as you can, and that will stop the bleeding. So that's the first. Breathing. When you look at breathing, you have to keep them comfortable to breathe. So if they're lying down in a position where they are supine, you got to turn them into a left lateral position. So this will give them, this is called more comfort for them to breathe. So they don't find it difficult when they're breathing. Okay. These are the two main ones.
You know, not many people advocate first aid and CPR in this country. I mean, why are you so passionate about it? And it's so, not enough people are talking about it.
I see a lot of people get injured, and I find that some of the conditions can be prevented because we are in a modern society and in a country that's already so far developed. We are not in a country that's developing. We're literally developed. And how is that someone can die of a condition of bleeding or in simple maneuvers that first aid can make a difference, even CPR. Mm-hmm. So if you know, I mean, the country's development status will give you knowledge of CPR to everybody. So you should, but the thing is, it's not trained, it's not marketed properly. People don't know about CPR. So we did a mass CPR a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. We got 250 people just want to learn. And CPR is made much easier. It's only two steps now. You don't do ABC, no more mouth to mouth. You just do call 999 and place your hand in the center of the chest and compress.
Right.
So things have become easier.
Very much. And with the AED, what more?
Yeah.
Do you suggest that every organization or every company has an AED in the office?
I don't think so. We have it in Kuala Lumpur, and it's sad because even the gyms don't have it. Areas where people are put in high risk, I think that's the first area. If you're putting someone at high risk in a job, if a company is very stressful, you should have this, because every day somebody is coming in with a stress. So cardiac conditions might prevail any time. You wouldn't know when and how it'll come.
But how common is it here in Malaysia for it to present, you know, during work? Have you done much research on that?
Statistically, we are still it's one of the top number one diseases of cardiac arrest in Malaysia. So having an AED might change things, and it's not expensive. So it's a company's investment on their staff to put it in.
Heart disease actually is the number one killer for both men and women.
Yes,
not just in the country, all over the world.
Around the world, yes.
How can people be trained to translate, you know, what they learn in theory into practice when you're faced with a situation where, you know, you're stressed and, how do you stay composed and do the right thing?
Thing is, when you read it or look at it online, you can have an understanding and try to understand the physiology behind it. but to get confident, because generally when you perform first aid, you're performing on a live victim, and it might be your loved one, so it's going to be even harder to do. So to do that, a one-time practice is very important, a hands-on practice, or just managing a condition so your understanding becomes better.
Mm-hmm. And a simple thing like someone fainting or collapsing, what do you do then?
First call 999. So give the time for the ambulance to come.
Mm-hmm.
Then as soon as you do that, then if someone's collapsed, then you've got to check and see whether they check for danger, then you check for response. Are you okay? If they're not okay and they're not responding, then you immediately start CPR. But if they are still semi-conscious, mm-hmm. and they're breathing, but they're not responsive well, then turn them to the rescue position, which is the left lateral position, and let them lie so that if they throw up or if something's blocking, they will be able to be more comfortable.
Yeah, they will not choke on yes. whatever it is. Yeah. Situations of emergency childbirth happens often on planes, but at home, if it does indeed, what do you do?
See, statistically, 95% of all deliveries are normal.
Right.
So there is a normal phenomena that will deliver the child.
So we don't need to do anything, really?
Yeah.
Not
a lot. You just have to keep your hands clean to deliver the child till the child comes. Have a clamp. So basic tools can be around there, which is common sense. There'll be a towel, keep the mother comfortable. If the baby is really coming out really fast, and then you can see the head at the cervix, mm-hmm. then that's the basic tools that you need. You don't need much because the rest will come out by itself.
Okay.
But always, the first thing is, before any emergency or any first aid, you got to call 999.
All right. Always remember, call 999. I have no confidence in 999. Dr. Navinder, I've said it. I have been very honest. Am I the only one, or, do I still go ahead and call 999?
We have to give, you still have to call 999 to give them the opportunity to make them avail themselves to the incident, because there's no other number to call to start with.
Yeah. What if you have hospital numbers available? Should you call the nearest hospital?
You can call, but the private hospitals don't run an emergency service, or they don't provide an ambulance service. They outsource it to the private operators. Mm-hmm. But whereas for the government, private hospital, calling a government hospital, they will still want you to call 999 mm-hmm. before you dispatch it.
Okay, so always call 999.
The other option is, if you can manage the injury and you provide some first aid, stabilize, stop the bleeding, or arrest the bleeding, go to the hospital on our own.
On your own, right, yeah. Okay.
But you have to stabilize first, and no need to rush, because once you stabilize, you know the condition is under control, mm-hmm. and drive safely to the hospital.
Yes, and that's the other thing, is that people tend to drive recklessly, and that causes other
speed
problems.
Speed's not the answer to it. Once you stabilize, everything is actually okay.
Mm-hmm. Another common situation would be when dealing with wounds and burns. What sort of immediate action should we take?
For burns, the simplest thing that you can actually do is
put Colgate on it.
Colgate is one, really, it does help.
It does help.
The other
help,
one is just
it?
Open the tap, running water, and okay. just let it run. That's it. Don't put ice, don't put salt water, don't put anything. Just running tap water. That should be sufficient.
For
until
how long?
Until you get to the hospital, then you have got all these burn aid creams, and you got all this silver sulfadiazine, which can be treated by the hospital or the clinic.
Okay.
Or everybody should have and own a little first aid kit at home.
Which most of us don't, Dr. Navi.
Yeah, you should have it, because it doesn't cost much.
Yeah, and where do you go and get a complete, first aid kit, which is of quality, and the stuff in there really matter, because you find some first aid kits which are not quite well, stocked.
To be very honest, I think the best would be go online and you buy it, mm-hmm. because the ones that we have here they're too simple. So if you go online, you can actually get from different countries. Their first aid is, and it's all tax-free. You can just buy them and keep them with you.
Okay, so they've
got very good first aid kits abroad.
Mm-hmm. And the other common mistake I find is people don't replenish the things in their first aid kit. You'd go one day and find there's no antiseptic, or there's no more Panadol, or that's something you need to keep
yes,
in mind as
you
well.
You need to, because most of the things inside the first aid kit usually has got an expiry of about 2 years. Now, generally, the gauze, cotton, they lose the sterility. But in an emergency, you can still use them. But ideally would be replenish them as it goes along.
All right. And is there any situation where it's better not to do anything and just call 999?
In most of the conditions of first aid, from all the types of cases that I was mentioning to you earlier, what would be good is always call 999.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be always good to perform a little bit of care, from respiratory to cardiac to wound bleeding to bone joint and muscle injury to foreign objects to nervous problems to poison and bites and childbirth. You need to perform a little bit of access,
mm-hmm.
and then you need to perform a little bit of basic first aid or injury management. And lastly, you got to give comfort. If you don't do the ABCs and you just wait for 999, the stress level of the victim will gradually start to increase, and that will worsen the current condition that the victim is undergoing by the time the ambulance arrives. It all depends how fast the ambulance comes.
Mm-hmm. And most of the, we're so far talking about physical injuries, but what about if somebody has an anxiety attack? What do you do then?
The same thing, like it's a traumatic injury, so you have to calm them down. So when I said comfort just now, mm-hmm. nervous problems, something, someone gets into anxiety, shock, you know, traumatic experiences, or they saw something. So these things, you have to calm them, you got to get them to sit down. So it's basic common sense. Some of us say it is basic common sense. Someone's having anxiety, hold them down, put them down, give them a drink of water. So you don't need to learn first aid, but you have to do this basic stuff
mm-hmm.
while help arrives. You know?
So comfort, very, yeah, very important.
And if it is somebody else, like someone for nervous breakdown or somebody's anxiety, get the number of the person who's closest to them. Let them talk over the telephone. They don't have to be there. They could be in another country. You can just get them online on the phone and pass it to the victim.
So just okay. And after that, take them off to the hospital?
Yeah, take them off to the hospital and sometimes they'll calm down. So because the causative factor, the anxiety has to be understood. So once someone has a psychological trauma or something and causes anxiety, first, most important, they need people around to calm them down.
And first aid training courses, are they available in Malaysia, and is it accredited? Where do we go?
The NIOSH, which is the National Industry Act, does have some programs. And then there are private companies that actually do first aid training and CPR. I think the Red Crescent and St. John's Ambulance does a little bit. So these are individuals. But there's no, for first aid, there's no highly accredited body giving you certificates, basically. So you just pick up the knowledge. It's not like, same like CPR.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the National Resuscitation Council of each country will give you the rights. Or you could use the one from America or from the UK and study it too.
And how important are refresher courses? Because you tend to forget.
Basically for first aid, there's not much of refresher courses necessary. And I've seen, because generally it's very much attached to common sense. But when it comes to CPR, it's always good to have a refresher every year to 2 years, because CPR is a technique that has, and it's a skill. So you need to practice that every 2 years at least. If not, you'll forget.
Mm-hmm. You said you had the organization you come from had a get together for about 250 people.
Yeah.
Who were they? Who are those who attended?
Public.
The demographic? Younger people, older people, Malaysian?
They were in the age group of 15 all the way until 50. And they were Malaysians and some expatriates and generally people who wanted, because they had, some came because they had a child, some were interesting, they brought their mates, because that's a good thing, because your mate has to know CPR, not yeah. you alone. And some were bringing their friends along, so it's family, friends, who, when somebody has got a certain condition that they are worried about, that they might have, they might collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the groups, so it's widespread.
How young can you start imparting this knowledge?
I think from the age of 10,
mm-hmm.
you can. The only thing is this level of compression won't be strong, but at least they'll know how to manage an emergency.
In your opinion, is this something that we should teach in schools and workplace?
I think we should follow what the rest of the developed nations are doing. It should be brought to schools. Like civics. When I went to school, I studied civics.
Yep,
I think
so
they're not studying civics anymore. So I think
I probably do it, call it something else.
Yes, but they have to do something like that. First aid should be brought to schools.
Okay. Obviously, there are different considerations to, you know, take into account before you start any form of first aid. How can first responders also respond quickly? Because, you know, it's your first time. What's your advice to someone who's going to someone's aid for the first time?
I think you shouldn't show an impression of fear and shock to the victim.
Which is quite hard.
Yeah. So
which
you
is
have
the biggest
to be,
challenge,
yeah.
really.
So if you think you're going to be more worried, if you see blood and you panic, then I think it's best that you don't address it. You better move on.
Yeah. So that's perfectly good advice, really.
Because you shouldn't be causing more stress to the victim.
Yeah.
They're
and
already under stress.
Even if you witness an accident, and if you are one of those who goes weak in knees, you know, I would suggest just don't stop.
Yeah. That will be actually better because you'll be more traumatizing to the victim. It's not for you.
Yeah.
Because we don't, because the victim.
But we'll have to deal with you after.
Yeah, exactly.
And during, and we don't really need more help. But not an excuse, though. I mean, give it a shot. I think empowering yourself with basics is really quite a good thing, really. Ignorance is in bliss.
Correct.
So get it done. How do we get more information? I mean, if we'd like more information on first aid or even CPR or even the automated external defibrillator, which talks now, where do we go? Is there a website?
Each of them are in individual websites, but normally if you go to the American Heart Association, to the British Heart Foundation, to the Australian Heart Foundation, they all have got lots of information on first aid to CPR and how to manage them with the AEDs. And generally, if you go down to training centers, you know, if you Google up first aid, you will actually get a lot of sites that actually give you online training. It's all free. Like the mass CPR that we conducted was all free for 250 people like that. So you need to get organization, get the office or the company that you work with to organize this to everybody. Because you should part with this knowledge, and it's not, it doesn't cost much.
Yeah, and it, you know, no loss really.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much for joining
me. No problem. Thank you very much,
Dr. Navendra Nageswaran, who's a family physician and general practitioner on advanced first aid on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.